All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It is November 30th, 2022, Wednesday. Good morning. How are you doing, Wade? How's it going?
I am well. And how about you?
It's amazing. Hey, it's a little rainy.
Hey, getting here is half the battle, right?
Getting
here is half the battle.
That's the easy part, honestly. Yeah. Actually, this is the easy part.
Yeah,
chatting.
This is the easy part.
Getting here was the hard part. Yeah. So you are Wade G. Jones from Alternative Solutions Consulting Group. I love this card, by the way. I mean, I can see through it. That's awesome.
I can't take credit for it, but once I saw the card, I work with a guy of mine from Urban Chirp. He does most of my platform as far as the social media and my marketing. And he said, well, I got an idea. And I said, well, let me hear it. So he gave me a copy of it, right? It had my stuff on it, but it was just one card. And he spent like $25 on this one card in order for me to purchase a whole bunch of them. And I said, wow.
And right? You felt sort of obligated?
I felt, not only did I feel obligated, but the fact that he took time in to invest in me about something that he thought would be. And it's a great tool. I give most people the cards, they feel it. And typically they keep it because they put it right in the wallets, because it's almost like, it feels like the texture of a credit card. So they're more inclined to use it as opposed to, you know, most people get a card, put it in a drawer and say, see, bye.
You know well, I mean? And, you know, it's a great card. And really, this could be the beginning of a relationship. What is it? 2.5 by 3 inch piece of something is really the beginning of either a good or bad relationship.
Absolutely.
I was going to start a podcast called "I Think We Got Off on the Wrong Foot." Maybe it should be called "I Think I Gave You the Wrong Card." Listen, you are friends with Rob West, the great Rob West.
Woo!
And
to know him is to love him, right?
I love Rob West. You know, I saw him the other day at a grocery store, and the first thing he did was gave me a hug. I was like, "All right, Rob."
So Rob is a little younger than I am, but
right. Do you want to talk? How old are you?
I'm 52.
Okay, I'm 54.
All right, so you know, Rob.
He's younger than us.
Yeah, Rob's. I don't even think he's 40 yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing about Rob West, to know Rob West, is that whatever he's doing, he's always excited about it.
That's right.
And if he's helping you, he's excited about helping you. So he's very infectious. So when he called me, he said, if anybody knows Rob, you just talk. I'm working on some stuff. I got a guy. I talked to him. I dropped your name. He wants to do a podcast. I told him that you'd be interested. I'm going to give him your number. He's going to call you. And literally, that is the phone call.
Yeah.
Right? And 2 minutes later, you text or called, and we've been going back and forth ever since.
Well, and what happens on my end is I get a text from Rob. Hey, how's it going?
Yep.
I got a guy, and then next thing, it's four people in my message box that I need to call, which I'm like, you know. And listen, this I think I share with you. This is probably like our 330th episode of doing this podcast, with talking to people once a week. Mm-hmm. And I have never had trouble getting people, but he starts giving me all these great people. I'm like, and I sent him a note the other day. I just said, thank you, man, because, you know, I think I'd have had people, but doing a lot of great, interesting conversations because of Rob West. Right. So, you know,
Shout out to Rob West.
It's great that there's people out there working like that behind the scenes, because he, not only is he like helping me, but, you know, he's helping a lot of these young kids. You know,
basketball tournaments. I don't know. I can't remember an event that Rob has done in at least the last 5 years that has not been on some form of fashion trying to get funding to help, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's actually doing free events, giving out meals, really just to help.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes people get so caught up with wanting their names associated with something, or the marketing, or how many likes you can get. Rob is one of those people that I think that doesn't come along a lot, that he genuinely does it because he wants to help people. And I don't know I know a lot of people that helps people, but I can't say that everybody's as pure as heart as Rob is.
Well, and that's our official first currency, right? Feelings.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You know, he does it because he knows it feels good. It's good to help people. It's better than to give than it is to receive. I was just listening to this Christian rock band, Striper, from my 80s days, and then the message was, it's better to give than receive, and that's what Rob does. So,
speaking of helping people, right?
Let's help somebody.
I'm going to flip the script on you real quick.
I'm here. Keep up close to that mic, though.
So for people that don't know what you do, right? Mm. Let's Can you give me a brief update of what you've done over the last 330 episodes, and what do you do as well as the podcast?
So my buddy Matt Haley, I don't know if you ever knew Matt Haley, but he's the guy, him and Scott Kammerer created Sodell Concepts.
Yes, yes, yes.
So Matt, if you ever knew Matt, or if you ever knew people that knew Matt, one of the things about Matt was he was always available to help people. You know, in the restaurant business, it's cooperation over competition. How can I help? Even though in the big picture we should be competing against each other, the reality is if we can help each other, we'll both survive better. Mm-hmm. So just great, a lot of great stories from him helping folks. And when he passed away, I remember a friend of mine's like, I'm going to pick up where Matt left off. And I was like, you just can't pick up where Matt left off because that was Matt's world. You know, Matt
that was his lane. That was his lane.
Yep. You can't jump lanes
without
looking like a fool. Right. So I'm like, well, how can we help people without, you know, making our own lane? Mm-hmm. And and this is kind of like, I guess he's been dead 9 years now.
It's been that long?
It's been that long. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. And it may be 8 years. I don't want to give him the next year. He's gone. We miss you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and then podcasting started coming along and the pandemic started coming along. And I'm like, you know, I like doing this. So it was just the premise was, how can I help a small business with an hour of conversation? And, you know, I think we learned a lot about businesses. You know, yeah, we do this. These are the services mm-hmm. we provide. I'm licensed. But talk to somebody for an hour, and I think you learn about something.
Yeah.
You learn about people. And I can tell you, 300-something episodes, we've never edited one.
Really?
Never edited a podcast. We, just like you and I did, I hit record, we set for an hour, and we put it out. And it's a great way of helping, and it's been a lot of fun. And then I also, you know, I own a hair salon, and I'm...
Yeah. Well, I mean, can you do anything with this?
Yeah. I could screw it up. Yeah. But, you know, so it all just kind of happened with the pandemic and everything. It was an opportunity.
It was a natural progression.
It was an opportunity, I just enjoy it. And, you know, I shared with you, you know, Joe Rogan was a big inspiration. The ability to just sit down and have a conversation as a hairdresser, I pretty much do like 10 podcasts a day.
Really?
Well, when I'm sitting with a client.
Oh, yeah, because, again, so as a therapist,
right.
Same premise, yeah. Right? The hard, and we'll get into it in a minute, but, you know, for me, the hardest part really is making sure that I'm present in a moment.
Absolutely.
Right? We all got stories, and I'll get into a couple in a few.
Well, and I think the tough part about that job, and it sounds like with your job as well, is being present, you know, providing this to a client or, a client. Mm-hmm. But afterward, at the end of the day, it's being present for my family when I get home because I tell you...
Work-life balance.
Yeah, it's... Yeah. I can get home and I just don't want to talk anymore. Right? And my wife's like... She's like, well, don't you want to talk? And I'm like...
What's up?
Yeah, so we have to figure out how to do that because at the end of the day, you know, I've got this world and then I got my personal life and I don't want to give all of this during the day and not have anything left for the family and stuff. So that's a tough balance. But yeah, I mean, it's all talking.
I had a session yesterday, and I was talking to a young lady, and you know, after a while, you can hear this. You can, you know, starts to go around in circles, and she was like, you know, why, blah 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 blah. And I said, you know, hurt people, and she looked at me like I told her that, you know, sliced bread is coming. I mean, like she, like her eyes opened up to the point that after a session, she emailed me back and kept saying, hurt people, because she really wanted to, she had to process that.
Yeah.
And I think we work in a world, in you know, I over the last couple of years, you know, it's really been the cancel culture, right?
Mm.
And how do we work back from that, you know, as a therapist? And so I'll get into me. So again, my name is Wade Jones. I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Yeah. I'm licensed in chemical dependency, meaning that I have a master's plus I have a CAADC, which is a certified advanced alcohol and drug counselor. I am the president of the licensure board, and I'm the vice president of the Delaware certification board for the state of Delaware. And I'm licensed in Pennsylvania as well. So
thank you.
Thank
you for your service.
So, you know, and... You know, because I don't have anything else to do, I actually teach a couple courses. Matter of fact, I teach about four courses at Dell State during the course of an academic school year. So they have a, the psychology department has a track for substance abuse, right? And so I teach like alcohol and drugs 1 and 2, ethics, special topics, treatment assessments to addiction, right? Yeah. So I do all that. So again, I do a lot, but I really don't work hard. I think that this is my calling. I think so. Everybody has their lane. Yeah. This happens to be my lane. I didn't go back to school until I was 32, right? So that
sounds a lot like me. I've only been a hairdresser for a short period of time.
Yeah, I went back to school at 32 and went for 8 years straight. So I have a postmaster's in child and family counseling, and I have
8 years of school
straight from the top. I did not stop until I was 40.
That's awesome.
And when I on the other side of it, I had associates, a bachelor's, a master's, and 2 postmaster certificates. But again, for me, that this gets me in the room.
Yeah,
this gets me in the room. I think the one thing that I've gotten through text, and it's hard to get through text, and I've gotten the brief phone calls that we've had together, is that you are authentic, right?
Oh,
and I think that comes through. And I think for me, again, you know, the knowledge base and the degrees and whatever gets you in a room, but how do you stay in the room becomes a question, especially because I work in, I'm now in 2 different worlds, right? So on one, well, matter of fact, 3. I'm in the world of academia, which is a whole different animal within itself, right? Then I have the social platform piece, right? When we're talking about the Fatherhood Coalition or other things that I do. But then you have the mental health piece. So there, for me, there are 3 different disciplines that I try to incorporate all at the same time. A lot of times I'm able to pull that off quite seamlessly, but there are times that I have to go ahead and just lock in and, you know, just really, this is the situation, and this is what I need to do in order to do whatever. So, I've been fortunate to be mentored by some great people, Jim Walsh, Teresa Dunbar, Daphne Warner, Vicky Artis. You know, Faye Blake. They actually molded me professionally. I feel now that I'm 52. I'm starting to be one of the old guys in the room. Mm. I remember when I was the youngest.
Yeah.
Like literally the youngest and only black male in rooms. Right. Yeah. And that's not that far ago. 10 years ago, I was the youngest and probably only in a lot of rooms. And I've done everything from HIV counseling and testing to urine screens. You know, so I've done the gamut of the whole prevention.
It's a tough world.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Addiction is, and I only know because I was an addict.
Right.
Right. You know, and
we all got a story, right?
Yeah, and I remember the struggles early on, and you know, it's really about surrendering, you know, waving that white flag, and finally giving up. You know, as a young person, I made rehabs and programs look like they didn't work because I didn't have the ability to be honest to tell you that I didn't want to get sober. You know,
a lot of people don't use the most honest statement possible to start moving forward. And for me, it was I like getting high.
Right.
Right. I like the way I felt.
Yeah.
Right. Now, on the other side of that, what happens is you break out in handcuffs. Right.
Broken windows.
And money's gone and. You know, you start looking around and family's no longer around, you know, those type of things. So those are the things that you have to really tighten up, right? You know, how do you, and we'll get into.
And I used to always say, I never wanted to get sober. I wanted to stop getting caught.
Absolutely.
Right. But, you know, I had to get sober and put some time in between that last drink to start recognizing because, listen, I could come here and be like, hey, look at me, I'm doing great, getting sober. I didn't have a lot of opportunities.
You know, early on, and mind you, my addiction was between 86 and 97, right? So you're talking about from the time I was 16 to 27, right?
That was my same window. Yeah, I mean, 86. Did you say 86?
86.
I was a little early. I graduated high school in 86, but yeah. I was a little earlier, but I got sober in 97.
Yeah, until 97. And, I really didn't understand the magnitude, and hear me out. I didn't understand the magnitude of my life, right? I didn't understand how I could be impactful across the board, right? For now, I walk into rooms and people are really interested to hear what I have to say. A lot of times I'm in rooms and they start talking, and I try to be quiet until I can't anymore, right? You know, because everybody has the answer to recovery and prevention, right? And so once I start talking, they look at me like, oh, Mr. Jones, like, you know, you have this great insight on the people that you serve, right? And a lot of times I'm laughing to myself, saying, no, I'm really talking about me at 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, right? And I think sometimes people don't understand that. When we talk about sobriety, and I talk about this every day for the most part because it's part of what I do. And it's always, for me, it's always the sobering part about what I do is have a clear understanding that I know a guy absolutely, wholeheartedly. I know everything about a person, and that person has the potential of messing what I got going on up. And that's a very sobering, keeps me very clear about where I'm going, right, and what my responsibilities are. Because if I wasn't careful, I would think that my responsibilities about my sobriety and what I do only surrounded or only dealt with me. And I know that's not true anymore, right? Yeah. To be in a situation where I can have a conversation with another person that maybe not had the same life experiences, but has had, if worst case scenario, we've had the same fears, right? Mm-hmm. Of losing things, of gaining things and wanting to keep things and gravitating and gaining a family and investing in time, right? Because, you know, addiction is very selfish, right?
Well, and I was going to ask you, because, you know, I don't identify as an addict. I identify as a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. The disease. There is, you know, you look at, you know, the story of, like, Adam and Eve, right? Yeah. There was Adam, right? And we got a rib, and we got Eve. Yeah. And who showed up next? The devil, right? Yeah. And that's how we're all, I mean, if you believe that, I'm not here to preach that, but if you believe that, we're born, our whole creation has that temptation weaved all up in us. And that is my problem. When I come to that fork in the road, I choose what I want to do rather than what, at the time, my say, parents the devil, would want us to do.
As they say, the devil's in the details, right?
Bro, you can't even, it's uncomfortable to talk about the devil. People get a little weirded out. It is
the part that I don't understand, and I think, and I know we're getting ready to go down a road, but I find it be ironic that people pray and talk about Christ and don't want to recognize that the devil. So if you recognize one, you have to recognize the other, right? As being, you know, what are we fighting against, for lack of a better word? So I call it
the lower power.
Yeah.
It's real. You know, I'll give you an example. I still am involved in going to AA meetings and stuff. And I was at a meeting, and there was a kind of a ruckus between a couple guys. And I was like, oh, my God, it was, like, uncomfortable, right? And it's getting crazy. And I'm like, you know what? I'm out of here. I have that option today as a sober person. I left that meeting, and I let them, you know, figure it out. But on the way home, you know, there's this voice. It's like, you can't go back to that meeting. That was unacceptable. Right. Can you imagine? And this whole list, and that lower power, the devil or whatever, ego. They've named it a lot of different names.
Yeah.
But that, whatever it was, talked me out of going back to that meeting. It separated me from recovery.
Vanity has ruined us all, right? Honestly, I think, you know, our egos gets more people jammed up than anything else. And I was going to go back. You know, I remember early on in recovery, I used to try so hard to prove to people how sober I was, how strong I was in my recovery. And oftentimes early on, I failed, right? Because it wasn't about proving anything. It was about being smart. Going back to what you just said, it's about being smart enough to keep yourself out of certain situations so you don't have to address that. Right, whatever that is, whatever your thing is, whether it be alcohol, drugs, domestic violence, whatever the case may be, right? So you don't put yourself in harm's way. And I think sometimes early on, if you don't understand recovery, that you almost try to put yourself in harm's way just to prove that I'm back or that I'm sober or I'm more sober than you or whatever the case may be.
I feel like it's almost impossible to understand recovery early on. I mean, it really is just... I did a podcast. I do another podcast, which I told you about. It's called I'm Sorry About Last Night. Mm-hmm. And I think the title was called Saying Yes to No's and No's to Yes.
Right.
You know, like everything in my world, everything like, you know, being rich, you know, big fancy cars, big jobs, all this stuff is good.
But
being poor, not a great job, all these things are bad. And that's just sort of how we've been trained. But it's unfortunate that when bad things happen to us, we automatically think that that's a bad thing that's happening to us, when really it could be one of the greatest miracles that are going on. It's a really one of those humbling moments where you, but it's hard to recognize it. You're like, I don't see it that way.
I've learned more about myself in failure than I did being successful.
Absolutely.
Because if nothing else, I've worked just that much harder to make sure I didn't do that again.
Right.
Right. Even if something, so in my world, I do, I write a lot of papers and or do a lot of notes. And sometimes you're doing a lot of RFPs, right? Requests for proposals. So basically you're writing for money. And, you know, I wrote my first RFP and what I write now is just like night and day. And you keep doing it. You keep doing it. You get better at it. You ask questions. You didn't get the first one. Okay. But it's okay. So what did I do wrong?
Well, do you get better or do you get comfortable?
No, for me, I don't want to make the same mistake twice. Right. I don't want to misspell the same word twice. I want to make sure that I'm in a situation to answer the question that's asked, as opposed to just putting a bunch of jargon down. And I think a lot of times, even in recovery, when you start talking about recovery early on, they can take you all the way around the Marbury Bush. They talk about their sponsor. They can talk about, you know, going to a meeting, doing 90 and 90, or, you know, 100 and 100, whatever the case may be, or, you know, what rehab they went to. But early in recovery, it's hard for them to talk about themselves and can they clearly identify what their triggers are outside of a relapse prevention plan, walking out of a rehab.
That's why, I mean, a lot of people suggest if you're new, you really have nothing to offer. You can just sit there shut your mouth.
Sit down. Shut up. Yeah, exactly.
And put take the cotton out of your mouth, put it in your, or out of your ears, and put it in your mouth, and just shut up. And, you know, and it is tough.
And I should have started with this. I do a lot of presentations. So I do some EAP stuff with the Bank of America, whatever. And when I start talking or start doing presentations, my first comment typically is this: I'm an expert at not being an expert, and that is my expertise.
Right.
Right. I know a little bit about everything, but I don't claim to be an expert. Now, some people might say I might be an expert in a particular field based on my credentials and time. I get that. Right. But for me, I think that keeps me in a place that I'm always wanting to learn, because you're an expert about your story and your situation, right? My job is to help facilitate change, right? Whatever that looks like, or help you identify some things that you need to do as a therapist, right?
Right.
So I never walk into a room or a situation where I think I know more than anybody else. I know what I know, mm-hmm. right? I know what I know just because of the time that I put in the field. But I really come in basically wanting to listen, even early on. I think a piece of that came from me going to school, and this really, sometimes you need to shut up and just listen because you don't know what the content is, and you have to really try to get it to a point that you can process it, and then sometimes you have to go back and whether it be teach it, or I don't want to use the word regurgitate, but on some level you have to present it again at a different stage.
Well, there's some value. I mean, listen, a person that can keep their mouth shut and listen and take it in and have a position of a higher road, more of a humble position, always open to listening, a person's very valuable.
Yeah.
If a person can't do that, they really have no value. I mean, it's like if you're so locked into your personal beliefs, that's fine, but we're not going to move anywhere.
Right,
you know, there's no flexibility,
no wiggle room.
And if a person's already stuck, and I think we probably all had moments where we would get stuck, right? We're yeah. justified, right? But when you are permanently stuck like that,
especially when we're getting drunk or drinking, and getting high, we held court. You know what whatever we thought, and God forbid if you thought something different.
Yeah. I got sober in 97. I drank after 5 years. Bounced around for another year, changed the sobriety date for pain pills. Mm. Finally, you know, I'd come in. First time I came to the program, I got in a fight. I got my ass kicked. I was embarrassed and I was ashamed. Mm. I couldn't imagine how I was going to explain to my people that I worked with these stitches. So I hit a BB But at the time, I'm like, I'm going to get sober. This is it. This is I really got my ass kicked. I was embarrassed and ashamed. So, you know, trying to even go look back at that kind of thing, trying to figure out the motivation behind, because I was sober for 5 years thinking that I wanted to be sober. Really, I came in because I wanted to hide. Eventually, you know, and I talk to people about this all the time, you know, it's these voices. You know, and I'm not crazy with voices, but there is a thing that happens when you sit and you look at a piece of cake and you're like, probably shouldn't eat that. And then that voice is like, but it's good.
Yeah.
So I'm like, write that down. Recognize that voice.
Just eat half. You know, half not going to hurt you.
Right. Exactly. So I'm like, be more aware of recognizing these voices that show up. Because I can tell you, the day after I got my ass kicked in that bar fight, drinking was not an option. I was like, I am done. I'm embarrassed. I could tell you every emotion that I went through.
Really?
But ask me in 3 months. Few less stitches, few less bruising.
Scars gone.
People
feel pretty good.
You know, I always say, listen, we get away with what we get away with as long as we have an audience.
Right.
The first step is like we admit we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable to everybody else.
Yeah.
That's what it should say.
We're the last to know.
Well, and you read that, you're like, God, I'm doing great stuff. Everybody else has had it.
Right.
You know, when I first came in, I'm like, yeah, it's unmanageable.
So
it really wasn't. It was unmanageable to everybody else.
I describe addiction like this. Addiction is like being in a very, very bad relationship. You know, in relationships before growing up or even now, everybody says, yo, leave her alone. What do you mean, man? She, you know, man, I'm telling you, leave her alone. Right? Man, I got this. You know what I mean? She's going to cut your tires and scratch your car up. And they're still saying, yo, leave her alone. Man, she's going, we're fine, right? It's the day in recovery or in addiction. It's the day that you realize that you have to get out of that relationship, right? It's that day. It's from that day until that day you actually leave. It's the day that you get your ass kicked in a bar and realize, man, I can't do this anymore. It's that day until the day you actually really get sober. Because I want to be very clear about what I said. I didn't say get clean. I said get sober. Because for me, clean and sober has two separate disciplines. I can be clean and be absent from taking a drug. Sober, a sobriety is a mentality, is a way of life. It is a way of that you look and identify.
Well,
things.
Let me, I'm going to help you with that.
Hold on. I tell you why I say that. Because I'm a firm believer that I think people relapse before they relapse. That's just my issue.
Sure, absolutely.
So I say that to say, in sobriety, right? There is a process. It's a way of being. It's the way you think. And we talk about sobriety, right? Because to be clean and go to a meeting is one thing, but to be clean and sober, because you look at meetings different, you look at the way you operate a little differently, right? You are very selective about the things that you do and the way you do it and how you do it and who you do it with. For me, all that's a part of the sobriety. There's no reason for me to say I can be clean, but am I sober still hanging out with drug dealers?
So the definition of sobriety to me is to be free of drink. That's the definition. Free of drink.
I take that as your definition, but that's my ism. I just looked it up
in a dictionary.
Yeah.
I didn't make it up. But let me explain, because there's a difference between sobriety and serenity. Now, you may be saying sobriety and clean. Sobriety may be falling more under that serenity. But to me, sober is free of drink. Serenity is free of think. And there's a real transition point in about the fifth step where you start to actually have to sit down with somebody, another human being. And that's the first time in the book it says sobriety and peace of mind. And peace of mind. Serenity.
Correct.
The serenity prayer. What is it? God, grant me
the
serenity
to accept the things I cannot change.
Courage to change the things that I can. And the wisdom to know the difference. That's our goal.
Right.
Winning. That's the win. You do that. You live a life like that. You've won. You've freed up the mind. Sobriety, free of drink. You have to obviously be sober, free of drink.
Yes.
But serenity is where that real transition.
I'll meet you halfway and say that.
Fifth step then.
I think, and based on what you just said, I take sobriety as being the second of the three steps.
Okay.
Right. I think you got to get some type of sobriety in order to get to serenity.
Absolutely. I was agreeing with you. I think you're saying sobriety is really serenity, and clean is sobriety.
Yeah.
You got to be free of the drug.
You have to.
But listen, you know, it's a weird thing. You know, I went to a meeting recently, mm-hmm. right? And there was a guy celebrating a lot of time. Everyone's proud. But he was probably about 400 pounds. And as the people praised him for doing as well as he did, he enjoyed a giant piece of cake. Right? And listen,
I get it.
Congratulations, I don't care. But, you know, it's only the shit that affects us, right? We're only as sober until the pain ends,
right?
Like, I'm not drinking, but, like, I spend too much money, right? Or I eat too much food, or it's whatever. So
I have a sneaker issue.
Dude, I got an Alma Joy issue, and it's bad.
Yeah.
I woke up with shame and guilt this morning about how many Alma Joys I ate last night. Yeah. But yeah, just trying to define it and then figuring out, you know, I always tell people, listen, be honest.
But you know what's funny? I think that it was this the last 5 minutes was a great window behind the door of recovery. And I say that to say this. Some people, this would be, the exchange we just had would be a whole 25-minute debate about who's more sober, whose sobriety is the best. Mm. And I think there's a place for both to operate, right? And sometimes you have to listen to what the person is saying as opposed to even in relationships, right? And I'll move on from this. Even in relationships, I think sometimes we get so caught up with, you're married.
Yeah.
Right? And before that, you probably was either married again or in relationships, right?
Yes.
Right. God bless.
I need a couple marriage chips.
Yeah. So I say that to say that, you know, the ironic part is in relationships, it's funny that we have the same argument over and over and over and over again. It could start from toothpaste or dirty clothes being on the floors, or the kids not getting someplace. But the conversation typically goes right back to the same topic. And that is because we typically operate from a place of wanting to prove that we're right as opposed to getting it right. And I think that's a different mechanism that you have when you walk into a conversation. And I'm looking for you and I to have a conversation and get whatever it is correct, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to me walking into a conversation and me proving to you that I'm right and you're wrong. It's a different, the conversation is different.
Yeah.
It's a different, because you get no resolution, right? So guess what? Because somebody comes in or the phone rings or you got to take a kid somewhere, you go and 2 days go by because the life is what it is. And then you can come back because you have no resolution. You go right back and have the same argument again. And then life happens and the phone rings, your mom calls you. So it's a vicious circle, and you have no resolution. And I think sometimes when we talk about sobriety, we're looking for absolutes.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know, like you said before, sobriety is so independently driven, right? It's unique to each individual that I don't never want to get in the murky water about what keeps you sober, what helps you stay sober, and it doesn't. I don't necessarily do that. I don't want there to ever be a barrier, because whatever works for you is working for you, and I support you, right? And whatever works for me, and I'm going to continue to do that as well. So I think sometimes there's a healthy balance. You see a lot of that in meetings sometimes,
yeah.
Because, you know, it's almost like I'm trying to prove that I'm more sober than you. You know, yeah. we both here and we was clean today.
Well, recovery, obviously, I mean, I don't know if you've even thought about this, but early recovery is really supporting self. You know, there's this self side of us. You can't, it's like, all right, come on in the way you are. We're going to start to slowly reprogram you. We're going to start, you know, that's why you mentioned the 90 and 90. I mean, I remember going to my first 90 and 90 and just, you know, it wasn't about the recovery. It was about the examples, right? These guys shaking hands. How you doing? Welcome. I'm like, I haven't shaked anybody's hand unless I was getting something, you know, or trying to get something. So, but just trying to learn, reprogram myself what it's like to be just a normal human, right? And then if I can get some of that reprogramming out, and then maybe if I stick around long enough, some of the other stuff will stick. But listen, I drank after 5 years, and I thought I was golden.
Really?
I thought, oh, yeah. I thought I was sober. I thought I had it all figured out. And I went. I moved over to Easton, took another job over in Easton, went to my first meeting, and I didn't like the way they handed out the money basket. I was like, why do they do it like that? And then that voice is like, maybe you can find a different meeting. And by the end of the month, I had just basically talked myself going to all the meetings, and then the next thing you know, this voice is like, look how good you've done. Maybe you should try a little drinking. And I was hiding bottles by the end of the week.
Really?
Yep. So, I'm one day at a time. I am one day at a time.
I think when I first saw you today, I said, you know, half the battle is getting here, right?
Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
If I can get here, I can, the rest of it will take care of itself. But me, you know, just being present again.
Well, the other thing that, and you know, it's tougher in your position because you're really in the business of trying to help people. I'm in the business of, besides cutting hair, when it comes to recovery, you know, I'm there as much as you need me, right? Like if you want to talk to me, you know, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not pulling people off bar stools. I mean, I've been doing this long enough. I know it's everybody's journey.
Yeah.
And some people, when I finally got sober, I was standing on a porch at a house that I'd been there all night, or not all night. We'd been at bars and stuff, and ended up partying.
Right.
Been there, and the sun's coming up. I'm drunk. I've done drugs. I'm smoking a cigarette. I don't even smoke cigarettes at the time.
Right.
I'm smoking a cigarette, and I won't tell you what I was dressed in, but I'm just like, it has been a long night.
Yeah.
And the sun's coming up, and it was my son's birthday, and he was turning one. And I remember I grabbed him. The sun came up. I went and got him, took him up to Dover to Toys R Us, and tried to buy as many toys as I could to make the pain.
Of how you felt.
Of how I felt go away. He was unaware.
Mm.
My wife had already left me. You know, I'd woken up one morning, she'd left with our son, and I still drank for another couple weeks. And I was standing on this porch. It wasn't a fight. It wasn't a stitches. I just said, you know,
damn,
I've had better expectations for myself.
Yeah.
And I just was, it was all habit. You know, I didn't drink like that in the beginning. It just gets us there.
But there's a point you look around and say, man, it's got to be something better than this.
It's got to be.
It's got to be something better than
this. Well, listen, I called this guy, and he owned a recovery house up in York, Pennsylvania, the Colonial House. He drove 4 hours, came and got me, went up there for 9 days, came home. On the way out, the lady at one of the counselors told me, she goes, you're still full of shit. I was like, you mean you don't think I'm doing great? You know, that's how sick I was.
Right.
And she goes, I think you're full of shit. You should be here a month. You should be here 6 months. I was like, but I luckily came back to Rehoboth, and that's when I hooked up with Matt, and he was just a huge help for me.
Right.
And but I wanted it, right? And I wanted it, and I wanted to be honest about it. And, you know, one of the things I always say to people that are in getting early on, I say, listen, it's okay to miss alcohol, right? Yeah. I think a lot of people come in, they're like, well, I can't say that. Because that would mean that I don't want to be sober.
I think a lot of people realize because of shame.
Absolutely.
Of and shame not, of being sober. I think it's ironic, but I think it's being ashamed of being sober. I really do think that. I think sometimes people are so fearful of talking about the struggles that they have that they create this whole narrative. And by the time the narrative is done, they found a way to justify having a drink or having something else. Out of pure fear of somebody looking at me and looking at me differently, I suppose, or not thinking that I am where I should be or whatever the case may be. For me, I've found that not sharing, let me be totally honest. I have the luxury of going to work and being in a room every day, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, a part of me is going in there and identifying and exploring people's journeys, right? But at the same time, it keeps mine on Front Street.
Yeah.
There's been a couple of times that I've really had to, like, from an emotional standpoint, really had to keep myself together, because what the person was saying on the other side was really, really... It wasn't even close to home. It was in my living room. It wasn't, you know what I'm saying, of what that person was talking about. So I think sometimes being, especially men early on, you know, being vulnerable in recovery is a conversation that we could probably have all by itself about being vulnerable, and let alone being an African-American man or a person of color and you put in, you factor in the cultural piece of it in sobriety. It's a lot. It's a lot. You know, I hate to say this. Men really don't get a day off, right? We don't get a day off.
I have a shirt that says husband, verb.
Yeah, yeah. So either we don't make enough money,
right?
Or the money that we do make, we need to give it away, right? You need to give. I mean, I say that, you know, facetiously, but whether it be wife, kids, bills, right?
You and get to give it away.
You get to give it away. Yeah, absolutely.
There's a difference.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, a piece of me, I'm very happy the fact that I'm in a situation that I can give some of it away.
Sure.
Right. You know, in addiction, there is no expectations or responsibilities. If we know that Wade is on drugs, so we're not looking for birthday presents, Christmas presents. We're not looking for him to pay his bills because we already know that. So the expectations and responsibilities, right, that come along with, or that are not existent in an addiction, right?
So that's, you know, and that I think is one of the challenges. I know that was a challenge for me because my father and mother were so worried and concerned that they really stuck by me. They really stuck in there with me, you know, and I said this before, we last as long as we have an audience, and we lower our expectations of these people, and we become an audience.
Real quick, and let me give you an example. So, difference but the same, and I say that. My mom got pregnant at 19, had me at 20. I never knew my father. You know, my mom died by the time I was 21.
She did?
And I have no brothers and sisters. I had to figure it out. You know what I mean? It was some things, and to be where I'm at now, I know, you know, the PTSD, grieving, depression. I classic sign. I knew that. But as opposed to going talking to somebody, I was getting higher running the streets or whatever the case may be. Luckily, I did it young enough that I was able to get my life together. And God knows my heart, right? So now I'm in a great position that I can take some of my life experiences and I'm able to give it back.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's awesome.
So that's you know, again, we all got our stories.
Well, and you know, the reality is that that's what saves you.
Yeah.
Because in the end, it's all up. I mean, it's about saving our own ass.
Hey.
And that's the inconvenient. You know, I always tell people, you know, whether it's church or it's a meeting, these are inconveniences. This is struggling. I'm not living unless I'm struggling. And people are like, or I like to say, I'm not living unless I'm suffering. People go, oh, suffer, that's a strong word. But it's about inconvenience. I say, you know, if this meeting is better than what you were doing at home, this is a social event. You know, going to church, going to meetings should be an inconvenience. You get sober, your life gets better, and then you have to suffer by going back, right?
Yeah.
And it's, but that's it. That's a 12 step. Now that you've had this spiritual awakening and you use these steps in all points of your life, your job now is to be there for the next suffering person.
In order to keep it, you must give it away.
That's right. And that's life,
yeah.
Right? You know, we have to work 5 days. They gave us two. Yeah. The weekend, 5-2 ratio. You work 5, you get 2 off.
Yeah.
If it's any other thing than that, if you're working 2 and off 5, you're probably miserable.
Yeah,
you're not everybody. So don't get all fired up.
Let me say this, and I'll talk about this fatherhood before we run out of time.
Dude, we can talk all day. So, I own this.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah,
I love this. This is great.
So here's the funny part, right? The funny part is,
and we're doing good on time.
Okay. I don't, COVID was 2020, January 2020.
March 15th, 2019 is when they shut my salon down.
Okay, so March, right?
Yeah.
Kobe died in January, right? Yeah.
Bryant?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, Kobe died in January. March, it was, the world was shut down, right? The first 2 weeks that the world shut down, I literally did not leave my house for 2 weeks. I did not crack my door sill for 2 weeks. Probably about 7 months in, I looked around. I said, yo, I'm still working because everything's virtual, right?
Yeah.
I've got to get out of here. I went and found a job. I went and found another job just so I could go and be around people. I was freaking out. And I do this for a living.
Right.
I was freaking out. Right, but it was I needed that interaction. And truth be told, what I realized is that I was drinking too much, home by myself. Liquor store was still open. I'm drinking a bottle and a half of wine because I got nothing else to do. Yeah. It's not like I wasn't paying my bills or I wasn't doing what I needed to do. It was just too much, right? So again, hey, buddy.
It's You're time. Home alone with that thought.
Yeah. Hey, buddy, it's time to come
the
on
lower
out.
Lower power.
Yeah, it's time to come on out. You know what I mean? So again, those things, because I say that to say, because I don't, nobody's perfect. And I think that sometimes we have to be, we have to self-monitor. And going back to what you said, nobody's coming through the door to save us, right?
No.
Right? No, it's a TikTok or Instagram. You show people working out. It says, nobody's coming to save you. You got to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you got to want it. Right? And I think there's... you know, and there's a lot of people out there that do drink, and it's fine, right? It's I can't drink, and I think that, but it doesn't always start like that. You know, you have, maybe it's a glass of wine, and then all of a sudden it's just this weird habit. I can tell you, when I was early on, when I had my first drink, I didn't drink the way I did on my last drink.
Right.
It evolved,
right,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right? And I didn't get there overnight.
Exactly.
And I'm not going to get better overnight. And exactly. It's, you know, that's why I like that you mentioned it, the 90 and 90. It's just like reprogramming myself on my behaviors. And surrounding myself with the correct kind of people.
Yeah. And I think, you know, again.
And whether it's a program like you offer or a meeting or anything like that, or just a one-on-one.
So real quick, and let me talk about Alternative Solutions. So Alternative Solutions Consulting Group, LLC, is it's a for-profit. At this time, I haven't done the paperwork for the nonprofit yet.
Yeah.
But I do a lot of consulting for mental health and substance abuse organizations. I've been outpatient director. I've been clinical director. I realized that I'd rather be my own boss.
it's ups and downs.
Yeah, it has its ups and downs, but it works for me.
Yeah.
Not saying I can't and won't go into a facility, because I will. But, you know, right now I'm doing pretty good. So I do a lot of consulting in regards to that. I've been the HIV prevention program manager for Sussex County. So a certified counselor and HIV counselor and tester. So I've done that. So I consult across the board. Primarily, I do mental health services. I provide mental health services and substance abuse services in Georgetown, 532 South Bedford Street, right down the road from the DMV.
Is that where children's?
You're too far. So if you was coming off 13 and you turned by the DMV in Thomas Collins with Thurman Adams, right? You turn that's South Bedford, right? Okay. So you literally, from my office, I can see the DMV.
So what are you in that probation building?
No, you're on a highway.
You're out on the highway.
No, probation's on the highway.
Okay.
So when you make that turn onto South Bedford Street, there's a brick building. It used to be an old Ready Call, right? On your right. If you keep going down, they've built storage facility on your right. It almost looks right behind DMV, but it's on the right-hand side. If the storage facility is on your right, my office is right across the street. It's on your left. It's 532 South Bedford.
Okay.
And I do, the youngest person I see is 6, and the oldest person I see is in their 50s. Okay. So, I mean, but I've seen people as old as 70. Age really doesn't make a difference. My sweet spot, if there is a spot to be had, is probably kids. I do some stuff. I do a lot of stuff with kids.
Kids are cool.
But, and a part of that is I've had a couple contracts with the Children's Department in the state of Delaware. And one of those contracts is I am the statewide coordinator for the Delaware Fatherhood and Family Coalition. The Fatherhood and Family Coalition is we started out probably, and I've been doing it since 2009, so I'm 11 years in. Ironically, I'm the only person left. When I started, I'm the only person left. Everybody else has changed jobs or whatever the case may be. So we started as an advocacy program, and I think the first thing that we was advocating along with a host of other organizations across the state was the checkbox. Are you a convicted felon? The checkbox. Remember, they used to be on all the.
Did you get it taken off?
Yes, it is no longer there.
So
you might get a criminal background check, but it does not have the checkbox where it says, "Have you ever been convicted of a felony?" That box is gone. But they still will run your criminal background. You still have to do paperwork, but that box alone is gone, because most of the time, historically, people see that box, they wouldn't even.
I hate that.
They would dismiss your resume or whatever the case, maybe application, right?
Yeah. No, I just, in fact, I had Steve Smick on not that long ago. I told him probation and all that. I thought it was a racket. You know, get rid of freaking probation. Why are we keeping people in this nonsense?
If there's a fine to be paid, pay the fine.
Yeah, and if you got to do some time, go do the time. Yeah. Come out and be free. Yeah. Why are we, you know, it's no wonder people are annoyed. I mean, they can't get to the thing. They're different podcast anyway. Yeah.
Listen, I used to be the prison reentry coordinator for First State Community Action, so we can call me back.
Dude, the door's open for you. Yeah. Well, I hope, you know, we talked about doing a podcast. Yeah. I'd love to. Yeah. You and I chat all day.
So the Fatherhood Coalition right now is our claim to fame, or I shouldn't say our claim to fame, but we do a lot of educational things.
Yeah.
So
I'm just looking at the pamphlet you brought me.
We have multiple curriculums. So myself, along with I think it's three other people, four other people in the state right now, are trained. We can train the trainers. So we're certified training the trainers. And we have four curriculums, one is called 24/7 Dads AM, 24/7 Dads PM. There's an Inside Out Dads that primary. That curriculum is helping, or it helps facilitate discussion and communication with people that are incarcerated, male or female, and their respective loved ones outside. So whether it be the children, family, or whatever the case may be, it really rebuilds the bridge for the gap of time that was gone. So case in point, historically, at some point in time, we've done Christmas, and where we have went into the prisons and done recordings for individuals, right, of individuals reading the book or talking to their respective kid. We take that, package it up, take it out, show it to the respective family, kids. And it could be for multiple reasons. Transportation could be an issue. Domestic violence could be one of the reasons why, other barriers, or whatever the case may be. We show it to the child and or the respective family, give them the opportunity to respond, whether it be the kid reads the book back to the mom or dad, or has a message, and then we take it back and show it to them. And it really, I mean, we've had people that have done that, and they've not talked in years, right?
You know, it's funny, and I've been to jail, and I went.
And me both.
Yeah, when I was in San Diego, I went to jail up in the Big Bear Mountain for 99 days, I think it was, and. You know, it's the cleanest and clearest your life will be at that moment. I remember I had a cold, and I'm like, I got a cough. Drink water. I was like, I mean, you're clean, and it can be one of the most emotional. Clearly, obviously, being incarcerated sucks, but you know, a lot of feelings that have been pushed down due to whatever it is we were doing start coming up. You know, and it can be a very tough situation. So, I mean, I think that's pretty awesome that you're allowing. Maybe people to, you know, maybe do a video or something like that. That's awesome.
And we, you know, we got four strategic priorities. One is promote fatherhood involvement as a positive influencer, right? I'm old enough, and you're a little older than me, and I don't know if you remember this, but I'm old enough that I was raised in, you know, apartments type, Section 8 type stuff early on. And there was a time when inspection would come around, inspections come around, that you would see women take trash bags and boxes of their boyfriend's or husband's clothes and sit them out by the trash can. And because back then, if an inspector came into your house and you had male clothes in there, they would cut your assistance off.
Wow.
Right? So they would really like go through and strip the apartment and sit their stuff by the trash bags and have a kid or something watch the bag until the inspector left and then go back and get the stuff. So we've come that far, right? You know, as a state, I can't speak about any other state. I'm a Sussex County boy, right? So I was born and raised in Seaford. I'm born in Nanticoke, you know, and I left and went to school and came back. But other than that, I live in Millsboro now. Again, build a self-sufficient, self-determining coalition. Again, the coalition is only as great as the members, right?
Right.
So, you know, as you know, if it's me, substance abuse, we have we have bishops, we have school teachers, we have truck drivers. You know, you got somebody like Rob West that's a part of the coalition. So they are all over the place. Provide DFFC education and technical assistance opportunities. the educational piece is where we talk about, you know, the curriculums that we use. And then I have these this little brief handouts. So tips for effective disciplining children. What happens is we so in chapter 4 of 24/7 Dads is men's health, right? So we talk about screenings, prostate cancer, blood pressure, eyesight. So that's all in chapter 4. Throughout the rest of the book, we really talk about how to and why we teach or why we parent the way we parent, right? You know, what did we take from our dads? What did we throw away from our dads? What did we get from our Uncle Ray that we liked as far as it being a good parenting philosophy? And what didn't we like from our dad that we took away? And we start to marry those, right? It's just a gumbo. Our parenting style is a gumbo of everything that we've ever seen, right?
Right.
Good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah.
So we really try to provide the educational component, really challenging some of the things that you've done in regards to parenting, your parenting style, your discipline, your isms about what is right and what is wrong. And then the fourth one is promote fatherhood and co-parenting services, right? So what does that look like? And when I first went through this, and I'll be totally honest with you, right? So I have one child. He's 32, he'll be 33 in January. Yeah, so you figure he's a whole person, right?
He's a whole person.
So you figure
person.
In 09 was what, 13 years ago? So he was
20.
But again, his mom got pregnant when I was 19. She's much older than me. Like, his mom is like 60 now, right? So she was much older than me, had kids, right? Didn't know she could have another child. Right. Has a child, mind you. Now, mind you, he has a brother that's in his 40s. Weird. Right? By the time my son was two, she was married. Another person was raising him. So at 19, 20, 21 years old, I don't want the responsibility. Hey, listen, sure. Let me get up out of here. Let me pay this little child support, you know what I mean? And I don't have to be an adult. I still don't have to be an adult. Fine. Got to 19, 20. I got to be a well-rounded adult,
yeah.
And say, yo, this is not right. This is, you know, I need to invest. Let's back up. Not only do I need to invest, I need to learn how to be a parent.
Right.
Right. So I got involved with the Fatherhood Coalition, really just so I could learn some stuff. Got into it, got addicted to it, started to learn, and not only did I learn more about myself, but I understood that my story could help somebody else. Everybody didn't, even though it may have looked a certain way on the outside, everybody didn't have an ideal relationship with their child, right? Right. And a lot of times you think it's the guy that's not living with in the household. I find that the curriculum and the things that we do has been just as effective, if not more effective, for men and women that are not living together,
right.
As opposed to, and it's just as effective to the people that are living in the same household. Because what happens is, and I got this from this is not my stuff. I got this from a training that somebody was telling me, right? One of the participants. He said, when we get married, sometimes, you know, after a while, we really start to, we don't communicate anymore. What we do is disseminate information. Pick up, drop off. Hungry, yes, no. What you want for dinner? Steak, okay, right? It's really, so you're disseminating information. You're no longer really having heartfelt conversations. It's because of not anything being wrong, because of life, right? You got to pick up the kids, take them to soccer practice. You got another parent taking this kid to basketball practice. And from there, they got to go get their hair done. She's picking up one because he's at the daycare. So it's about logistics as opposed to anything else. We stop communicating. And what the curriculums do is really go back to a fundamental core belief about healthy communication produces healthy kids.
Yeah.
right? Now, whether you whether you're together or you're not, healthy communication between parents produces healthy kids. Don't necessarily have to live together. Could be divorced. Again, healthy communication produces healthy kids. Going back to
a and there's other things. I mean, you know, surrender is a big one.
Say it again.
Surrender.
What are you surrendering to? That becomes the question.
Well, what you were and what you are now.
Right. And so you use the
word. And, you know, and I talk to people about this all the time. You know, I've been divorced twice. I'm on my third marriage. And at some point, I wanted to be a great ex-husband. Right. You know, I could you can find ways. Listen, there was challenges during these divorces, you know, and I've shared about this on other podcasts. And, you know, I see people that are going through situations like this. They're like, I'm getting ready to go through this court battle. And I go, let me just tell you. You know, this may be a guy you hate right now, but this may be the greatest ex-husband that you have one day, right? This may be the greatest baby daddy that you have. And so I can tell you, as a person that's been divorced twice, my wife and my ex-wives all get along. We all get along. It's very important to because that's what kids watch, right? That's what kids see. And so it's very, you know, you never know when you're going to have a great relationship. So just if you're...
this is a sidebar, right? You have kids by just one or...
Two of them.
Really?
Yeah, my son David was from my first wife. Mm. My second son was from my second wife.
Interesting. And they all get, everybody gets along.
Yep. Everybody gets along.
Saves you a headache.
Well, I don't... I think there was headaches that came from making that get to the place where we all get along now. But it's really about my kids, you know, and it takes a team, you know. And I think at some point you have to surrender. I have to surrender. I have to take a higher road. You know, my buddy Matt, when my first divorce, we had to, you know, it was a little... We had to split up a house, and I was like, I can't believe this. And he goes, listen, just give her whatever that she wants. Because this will not matter in 5 years.
Won't matter.
It won't matter.
You'll get it back. Whatever it is, you'll get it back.
Yeah, you'll have a better relationship one day. Like, you know, today my ex-wife is taking my son, who lives with me, to Temple University. He's going for a school tour today.
Okay.
And this is a kid that, you know, has seen it all. But I believe that I sort of step back a little bit as far as I look at my kids as mini adults. Mm. We're the same. I just have more experience. I've seen more. There's a lot of things I can learn from my kids.
A guy told me that if you try to control everything, you control nothing.
You're wasting your time. Yeah. It is ridiculous.
Yeah, you control nothing.
People say, what's your son doing for school? I go, I don't know. He's the one going. Because this is, my parents did everything for me, applying for school, all this stuff, and all secretly while I sat there and go, I don't even want to go to school.
Right.
I just didn't have the guts to tell them. They were so determined. So I say, David, you want to go to college? Go to college. You know, do you need me to give you a ride? Tell me where we're going.
Right.
But I'm not picking. I'm not picking your career personally. I think 17 is too early to decide what you're going to do for the rest of your life. I think it's a racket, and I hate it. I hate that we have that system in place that these kids have to choose. But it is what it is, right? And I think it's like 30% of people on Social Security now are still, their Social Security retirement is still being, people are still taking out student loans out of it.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know student loans don't affect your credit rating?
They do not.
They do not.
Yes, I did.
That's a racket.
You know why? Because I got student loans.
Yeah. And if you, a lot of people do, and we wouldn't be able to buy anything else. Yeah. We wouldn't be able to buy houses or anything.
I'm going to throw something out here, right?
Go ahead.
So a part of what the fatherhood does, we look for, we have something called barbershop talks or salon talks, right?
I got a salon.
I heard, right? So what we do is maybe once a quarter come in and with all these good gadgets, paraphernalia, handouts, and really just sit up shop for a couple of hours. Could be the middle of the day, could be on a Saturday afternoon, whatever. And I really want to take time to say it's the Delaware Fatherhood and Family Coalition. Sometimes people only hear the word fatherhood and forget that we provide services for the entire family, right? And I know probably 75% of your clientele is women, give or take.
Yeah.
Right. But it's not, again, it's not about it's as much as this, because one book that we have is called Understanding Dads for Moms. Really, so it's a curriculum, but it's geared towards mom. And again, the premise of the curriculum is really just to help people figure out how to better communicate. Use the word surrender, and I think we use the word surrender, and then earlier on we talked about egos, right? And you know what I mean? And I think that, you know, going through a divorce or going through anything, that you have to almost put your pride, I use the word, in your pocket and do what's best for the situation, and not necessarily what's best for Wade or David all the time.
So that would be surrendering.
That's what I said. I use the word surrender. I think
it's funny how we rename, like, surrendering, different right. thing, pride yeah. in my pocket, all these different things. Yeah. It's all raising the white flag. You know, I always say, if you want to keep one foot in doing what you were doing and trying to keep one foot in what you want to do, they're just not going to happen. You have to surrender and
I figured out I didn't know this trick probably until I got a little older. Old guy, you say yes, dear, is the greatest response he ever came up with. Yes, dear, right? So, you know, I a couple friends, whatever case may be, she gets to arguing. I say, okay, no problem. But, you know, I said, it's not that deep. We can figure it out. And to say it now, it almost like it jars her, right? Because like. She's almost ready to go through this whole debate. Hey, it's not that deep. Mm-hmm. Okay, if this is what you want to do, all right. Well, let me make a phone call and I'll get right back with you. Now, before, I'm so helping. Well, I want it this way, and at the end of the day, it's not that deep.
No, it ain't worth it.
Yeah, it's not that deep.
It's not worth it, and you know I can't. You know, I was thinking about this, and I shared this at a meeting the other day. You know, a lot of the decisions that I've made and a lot of the things that I, the person that I am today were decided during my addiction, right? My partying, my youth, you know, what I like, what I don't like, what foods I liked, what foods I didn't like. Right. You know, it's this weird kind of thing.
And how you associate one with something else.
Right. And now I come into, as a person that's sober, I was just invited, it was a couple weeks ago, but I was invited to play on the Cape. It was a team that played against the Harlem Wizards at Cape High School. Mm-hmm. And so a friend of mine said, do you want to play on this team that plays against the Harlem Wizards? And I was like, yes.
The Wizards are Globetrotters.
This is the Harlem Wizards, not the Harlem Globetrotters. This is
like a lower level of the Wizards?
I guess. Okay. But they play over at Cape. This is, I think, their second or third year. It was huge. It was a big event. Right. I was like, I didn't know what I was saying yes to. But at some point, I decided I will not say no to anything. Right, I'm not going to skydive. I'm not skydiving, and I'm not falling out of a plane. But everything else,
I have not come up with the logic, or somebody to give me enough money to jump out of a plane. That's
perfectly good.
It's perfectly good. I can't wrap my mind to intentionally go up to jump out. This doesn't make sense.
Well, honestly, I think skydiving would be easier than playing the Harlem Wizards. But I did say yes, but man, what a great experience! And
I had fun, didn't you?
Oh my God. And I shared on the podcast, I had two big like time stamps on the horizon a couple weeks ago. One was playing on the Harlem against the Harlem Wizards on Sunday, and the other one was speaking at a meeting in Georgetown on a Friday night.
Really?
Yeah, two big deals. Two things that make me nervous all the way up until you reach that line, and then once you push through it,
once you're here, you're here.
The miracle happened, man. That is the spiritual awakening. That's where, whether it's ego, devil, whatever we're going to call it, is right there at the line. Don't do it. And you're like, bro. And you push the devil aside, and you push through, and that miracle happens.
Case in point, you wake up today. I will be, I'll make it, but this, so at 1 o'clock, my day really starts. So I woke up today, I look outside, I check my phone, I say, shh. It's raining. I really don't even have to move until 12 o'clock to get dressed and get out of the house and be at my office in Georgetown by 1. Man, do I really want to take this drive? So I start thinking. And this is...
Now, do you identify that voice? Do you identify that?
Yeah. That's the lazy way. Wade doesn't. I don't have a lot of time to. I don't have a lot of time. Like in my real life, I really don't have a lot of time to entertain him,
right.
because
exactly.
because to entertain him, then I wouldn't get anything done, right? Because now, could I take a day off? Yeah, I could, but I'd probably get sick of by 4 o'clock. And to take a day off by 4 o'clock, I'm on the computer looking at what I missed. I'm looking at my phone all day anyway, so I'm checking emails.
You're gonna pay at some point.
Yeah, you're going. I tell my friend all the time, somebody got to pay taxes, right?
Pay now or pay later.
Yeah. But here's the funny part. I get in my car and I leave, and my phone, I have it scheduled for whatever reason. I had it scheduled for 9:45. So when you text me at 9:45 and said it's at 10:30, I was already on the road, which was great. So I actually stopped by First State, right? Because this Saturday, December 4th at 6 o'clock at Modern Maturity Center, we're doing our annual awards ceremony, right? We're doing a sneaker ball. So people just dressing up in suits and putting on sneakers. You're free to come if you want.
I don't have a suit.
Put a pair of pants on.
Button up?
Yeah, sure. It make no difference.
Listen, please invite me.
So, and I'll send you an email with the flyer. So it's at My Maturity Center at 6 o'clock, right? So today's one of those days that you're finalizing the program. So I had to go and take 15, 20 minutes and do that. And I'm talking on the phone to my guy, right? About, you know, you need to change this, let's move this over here. And you know, it's probably something in there now I need to look at. So getting ready for Sunday. So when Sunday comes, nobody's going to understand that the amount of work that goes in. For me, it's not even about the paycheck or a paycheck. For me, my success comes in when I can see somebody show up and have a great time and there be no worries. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you really, again, so by happenstance, if I listened to it and fell victim to it, I just called you and said, man, you know, something came up, I can't show up. But again, everything I've done from the time I moved until right now has been boom, boom, boom. And it happens all the time. It happens all the time. I know that I just got to get in here is half the battle. I know I just got to start moving. If I start moving, if I do everything that's on this phone, two things are going to happen. I'm going to be relatively successful. I'm going to make some money, and it's going to keep my ass out of trouble.
Well, like I said that early on, you know, learning that yes, yes to the no and no to the yes is a thing. You know, I'm in the same way. You know, this is my day off. I'm off on Wednesdays.
Yeah.
I'm so busy. I had to do a client this morning because she needed her hair done. I want to do a podcast with you, so I'm busy on my day off, right? Yeah. But I know at the end of the day, I'm going to have a great end of the day. Like if
right.
I sat around and did nothing on this justified day off. Mm. All right. My dad's calling. Yeah, you got things to do.
Yeah.
Too.
So I think that we rediscover and figure out when we can do the next one.
Yep.
And be a little more driven about what content we're gonna go down and I'd be more than willing and happy to do it.
I'm with you. All right. I love this.
Hey, I appreciate your time.
Wade Jones, you are the man.
Hey, listen, I just try to keep up with you.
Well, listen, we'll post this on Monday. I'll post pictures of all this stuff. Website. If people want to find out about this stuff.
It's DFFC Dads, I believe it's DF.
You're on Facebook.
Yeah, DFFCDads.org.
And then Facebook is National. I'm sorry, I don't have my glasses.
No. So it's going to be the Delaware Fatherhood and Family Coalition. The National Fatherhood Institute is just it's where we get our material from.
Oh, okay.
But the Delaware Fatherhood and Family Coalition has their own website. You can go to www.dffcdads.org. It'll have our website. It'll have our officers, statewide and local, and we'll also have all our events posted.
Well, and I'll put this in the links in the podcast, so it'll be permanently in there. But listen, hey, thank you. I hope we do something else. I hope we continue.
This
has been great. I love this stuff.
Yeah, I do too.
This is my passion, helping people, and hopefully helping people find recovery also. So, but listen, thank you so much, and we'll talk later.
All right, buddy.
Bye.